Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning. It is a lovely, fresh morning here in Johannesburg. It's the 20th of July, just gone 8 minutes after nine. You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show, and I think this is going to be one of the most important shows that we've had in a long time. The summer season is approaching, the June-July holidays are upon us, and we're going to be chatting with Andrew Ingram, National Sea Rescue Institute Communications Manager, and Daya Sudus, now I hope I haven't destroyed the pronunciation of your name, President of Life Saving South Africa. Yeah, I remember getting my bottom kicked when I was a nipper at Camps Bay, so I'm a little bit scared of senior lifeguards. So stay with us. Let us have your questions for our guest on 061-895-1019.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here. Yeah.
And we are back live, having a little bit of a chuckle off air. Two fantastic guests and chatting about a really, really important subject. And Daya, obviously you said you're now media manager. We had to change the title. Welcome to both of you. I think, Daya, let's start with you if I can get a quick introduction and your background. And then Andrew will move to you as well. So Daya, the floor is yours.
Very good morning to you. I represent Life Saving South Africa, a 113-year-old voluntary organization. As you corrected, I serve my term as president. I'm still on the board. And as you know, Life Saving South Africa is committed to water safety and drowning prevention. If you look at the build-up to World Drowning Prevention Day, which you pointed out to be on the 25th of July, it's something that the International Life Saving Federation started in 2011. And then by the time Life Saving South Africa hosted the World Drowning Prevention Conference in Durban in 2019, it was the final push where the United Nations finally declared that we will have a UN World Drowning Prevention Day on the 25th of July each year. So it has been a 10-year struggle, but with successfully achieved with the support of the World Health Organization and other global drowning prevention alliances, like we do with South Africa. You know, we work closely with NSRI, with municipalities, with a range of organizations to ensure we can meet our nation's needs. I hope that's sufficient, Nicholas.
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much. Andrew, your quick background and what you do.
Good morning, Nicholas. I was a seagoing volunteer with NSRI. I'm based at Buckhoven for just over 40 years. So Buckhoven and Camps Bay is seriously my place. And I love the vessel that you have in the background is Rescue 2. I served on her for a long, long time. I think that the theme this year, the WHO's theme of Unite to Turn the Tide is really appropriate. It's what we have to do. And in fact, in South Africa, we have been doing it for quite a while. The working relationship between Life Saving South Africa, the clubs and the NSRI is extremely good, particularly in areas where we have what we refer to as drowning in progresses, when you need high-speed responses and to get the people there absolutely as fast as you can. Mm-hmm. And it's so gratifying to see unpaid volunteers responding to these things in such a professional manner and saving lives. So I think from our organization, we started a drowning prevention department that focused on the prevention side of things in about 2006, and then expanded in 2013. And almost all of our lessons come from the practical side. So the issues that we've seen happening, why do they happen and how do we stop them happening? And that we built into our water safety education program. We have instructors around the country who teach that. And into our survival swimming program. What do you need to teach children that is really important? That if suddenly they get out of their depth, how do they correct that and float and get back to safety? And we don't teach any more than that. With a little bit of luck, with the children who we've taught that very basic survival to, will go on to swimming lessons and then go on to become nippers and lifeguards and just become a member of this amazing community that Daya and I are in.
Absolutely phenomenal. And it is an absolutely incredible community. I was very fortunate enough to get my swimming training under Dennis Pearson, the legend, and growing up with the Fialkov brothers as well and with their dad. So, you know, the history there is amazing. Just to see what these guys are capable of doing in the water. But swimming lessons are a luxury. And what I wanted to start the conversation off with both of you is I think South Africa is also in a very unique position where we get large groups of people coming to the coast, coming to water, lakes, dams. But primarily, I've experienced it at the coast. You go to Balito in December and the lifeguards are working overtime. It's, you know, they are in and out of the water nonstop. You know, maybe you go to some other beaches where it's a little bit more relaxed, but you're getting a mass of people coming, perhaps who have never really encountered the ocean and have only swum in fresh water. And I think that kind of makes us quite unique. It's a silly question, but how important is swimming education? Is it something that we need to be driving into schools, into communities? And I think let's start there. And then how have these unique challenges been addressed by both organizations? So I think, Daya, if we could start with you this time, please.
Yeah. Nicholas, I think I need to just reflect on something you said. And thank you very much for acknowledging the role of the lifeguards. Mm. If you just look at the Durban beaches in the last two Decembers, massive crowds on the beach, on all of the main beaches, but there was not a single drowning during duty hours. So it's a fantastic, I mean, you got 15,000 on one beach, 17,000 another, and this is day after day after day. Mm. And the simple message here is drowning is preventable, absolutely preventable. So if bathers go to where the lifeguards are on duty, they've assessed the risks, then your risks are minimized because you're actually swimming where they keep you under surveillance. And if the conditions, the water, the ocean is a dynamic environment. Mm-hmm. Conditions could change from hour to hour. And if they move the bathers, then there's an expectation that all of the bathers will listen to the lifeguards. Sadly, what we do see is, because the security forces, the police, effect searches of their bags for alcohol, etc., you get people going to remote beaches which are unpatrolled. But let me come to your question. Yes, swimming is an essential skill. And as Andrew pointed out, we also focus on the survival swimming so that if the kids or any adult falls into the water, then they have the basic rudimentary skills that will be able to keep them afloat and at least get to a safe place. Mm-hmm. Where they can grab onto something or to keep themselves afloat until help arrives. It is a challenge in South Africa. Life-saving, as you know, we start with micro-nippers, 6 to 8 years old, and then nippers from 8 to 14. And it's amazing to see these children who become so water safe. They themselves become, we've had lots of instances where there were rescues. They themselves effected rescues or even help outs. So it shows that the swimming skill is an essential life-saving skill. I just want to say the challenge in South Africa is often the lack of facilities. And it's something that, a platform like yours could emphasize. Across the country, we see public pools which are non-operational and have been non-operational for years, due to a lack of maintenance, or often you hear there's a lack of budgets. And we call on authorities to make sure that these facilities are available. Even ourselves of Life Saving South Africa, we are often appreciative of the access to private pools, to private schools that actually make their facilities available, and obviously for those facilities that are available to be able to bring kids who have not had the training or the experience or the access to the facilities and ensure that they can get the most basic skills. Mm-hmm. And then of course, together with that, we affect the practical skills as well as the theoretical skills, which we will speak about in the Water Smart program.
Okay, thank fantastic. You. Thank you so much. I think if I could just interject here and add this comment. Personally, I believe that the ability to swim, or at least keep yourself afloat, we're not talking about learning crawl or butterfly or backstroke, the ability to swim, to keep yourself afloat until you get help and not to panic, I think is a basic human right. And we really need to be looking at it this way. Andrew, your thoughts?
Yeah, Nicholas, I think that was hitting the nail right on the head. It is absolutely a life skill that everybody should have. And I think that Dyer summed it up really neatly in that there are just so many problems around it. The lack of facilities, municipal pools that are not working. How do you get children to the swimming pool? It really is a very, very complicated thing. So certainly both of our organizations are working really hard at that. And the education department is also doing a lot to try and remedy this. But I just think it needs so much thought and it needs so much effort and a lot of money. So for instance, the NSRI trialed what we call survival swimming centers. So we built a swimming pool inside a shipping container and took it to, there's four of them around South Africa at the moment, took it to the pool, to the children at their schools. And we teach the children how to float and how to move only 5 meters through the water inside these survival swimming centers. But it's a drop in the ocean. We just need so many of them. We need to get so many children to the water. It's really
Andrew, sorry to interject. We've got to pay the rent, and we'll be back, and we'll touch on that when we come back. And also what I'd like to talk about is, you mentioned the swimming containers. What other initiatives are you both involved in terms of helping people learn to swim? And perhaps how can private companies get involved in supporting this? We'll be back with Andrew and Dyer, talking swimming, NSRI, lifeguards. This is a vital, vital conversation. Join us on 061-895-1019 with your questions.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
And we are back with our two fantastic guests, Andrew Ingram and Die. This is my famous skill, Sudith. And I think I get into trouble because I don't often mention the radio station. And I have to say, it's 101.9 Chai FM, the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. But I'm so focused on conversation because it literally will save lives. And I think the understanding here is that drownings are really, I need to be careful with the language, unnecessary, avoidable. These are things that, you know, when we choose to go into the water, we need to know how to look after ourselves. So, Andrew, just before we went to break, we were touching on the shipping containers, the other initiative, and I'd love to hear from both of you about what initiatives are being done, and perhaps how can the private sector get involved? How can companies get involved in supporting this vital life skill? Andrew?
Nicholas, so there are so many ways. We have just launched a series of 5 videos on our YouTube channel that talk about volunteering for the NSRI. So I think in many people's minds, when you talk about NSRI or you talk about life saving, your listeners might think about the image behind you, which is people in red wetsuits and life jackets going to sea in rescue boats to save people. Or as Daya was talking about earlier, those amazing lifeguards on Durban beaches who work themselves to death to save other lives. It's quite remarkable to watch. But in both organizations, let me talk about the NSRI, that's not the only place that you can volunteer. So we have volunteer survival swimming instructors, and that will be community members who run survival swimming classes from their local municipal pool. So you will know the Sea Point Pavilion, for example. So each Saturday during summer, we have a team of people who go into the Sea Point municipal pool with the blessing of our municipality, and they teach anybody who would like to learn how to swim the basic skills. So the oldest person they've taught is an 83-year-old. It's never too old, and mainly their customers are young people, children whose parents have brought them to the pool. But you can volunteer by being a survival swimming teacher. You can volunteer by looking after the pink rescue boys. You can volunteer by teaching water safety education. So I think that there's so many different ways that you can give your time to make a difference in this water safety environment. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's money. Without sponsorship, we really wouldn't be able to do any of the stuff that we do. And interestingly, it's not a lot of money. The bottom line is a lot of money, but the average donation to the NSRI is from individuals who give 50 rand a month. So you really don't have to donate a lot. You can donate small amounts of money, and it just makes an absolutely enormous difference. Mm-hmm. And for those who are interested in volunteering or donating, nsri.org.za, our website, is the place to visit.
Are those yellow NSRI boats you used to put your coins in still available? I don't recall seeing them in a while.
No, Nicholas, we stopped those quite a while back. It was a governance issue. So as the world went cashless, we realized it's actually very difficult to prove to our donors how that money is being used. So, they were really well known, and there was a lot of people going, why have you taken them away? We like them at till points and so on. But it really was a massive governance issue for us to be able to show where that money was going, how much came in, how much went out, and we can now do that exactly.
I think maybe you need to do a deal with Yoko, where instead of one of their blue machines, you can have a yellow one to tap your card to support both institutions at the tills. Daya, for yourself, what are some of the initiatives?
Well, Nicholas, I think, I started off by speaking about the nippers. Mm-hmm. Starting off with young children to ensure that they are receive the necessary training. It is a skills-based program. They do have qualifications at nipper level, but the emphasis is on fun. We call it mm-hmm. fundamentals, the basic fundamentals. And you see how it actually grows. And it's amazing to see young children begin to get some knowledge about the risks involved in water. Mm-hmm. Something which they actually then take with them into the schools, into their families and communities. And I must say, one of the biggest recruitment, if you look at South Africa, we all know that, for example, the apartheid laws meant that some communities live further away from the ocean than other communities. But now that communities have become integrated, schools have been integrated, the biggest recruiters are the nippers themselves. You invite your friend for a sleepover on a Saturday night, and then on Sunday night you say, listen, come with me. I'm going down to Clifton. I'm going down to Durban surf, etc. I'm going to have to do a two-hour training. You're welcome. And then it snowballs from there. Mm-hmm. The other big thing that we're targeting is, especially with faith-based organizations, mm-hmm. if you look at the stats, and we'll probably speak about the stats, it is tragic indeed to see communities who are going to perform their baptisms along the water's edge end up being drowning victims, fatal mm-hmm. drowning victims. Working with faith-based organizations to ensure that that they go to areas which are safe. And obviously, if they come down to the beaches, that the lifeguards arrangements can be made for lifeguards to be on standby, show them where to enter the ocean, where will it be safest, rather than just entering the ocean at any place and then getting sucked into a rip current and you have a tragedy of hand. The Water Smart program is something, and I hope we could speak a little bit more about that.
Please.
We've written this within the life skills orientation in the school's curriculum. So we started at grade 4 to 6. We've then expanded that from grade R to grade 6, and it's written into the life skills orientation subject. So it's not just, something that Andrew and I and a whole lot of volunteers, we would end up going to school in the morning, addressing an assembly. And before you can, by the time you jump in your car and drive off to the office, you almost get the sense that that message has flown over the kids' heads. Now, this is teaching Water Smart like you would teach history and geography, etc. The pupils go through the tests and quizzes, so they go through the assessments and then they demonstrate their learning through successfully completing the assessments. So that's something. And then we had sent to Sena a QR code for a learning hub. It is absolutely free of charge. We know little kids may not have their own mobile devices, but parents do. And we emphasize this fact that, like you would teach a kid to read, you just don't simply toss a book and say, "Here, son, off you go and start reading." It's great when a parent sits with the kids. You read one page, the child reads one page, you read one page, the child reads one page, and you kind of develop this whole relationship. Similarly, too, the Water Smart education is something that parents and kids can learn together. They can go through the test. And the tests and quizzes, by the way, is based on gamification. Kids love to play their
Brilliant.
Xbox games. So you level up, you keep leveling up from module one to module two. And I must say, if you can encourage your listeners, put it onto your website and try FM. All they do is scan a QR code, and I guarantee you it will not even take more than 50 megs of data to download four modules. So it's very, very low data intensive. And then we move on, as Andrew indicated, where the pools are actually operational. We work very closely with the municipal lifeguards in the off season to make sure that not just learn to swim classes happen with little children, but with mums, stay at home mums. They would have a lesson. Adults are brought in to do the aqua exercise, and then they are taught the safety and the survival swimming, so that you address this need within an entire community. And then lastly, I wanted to say, Life Saving South Africa is registered as a sport federation. Like you got Rugby South Africa and Cricket South Africa, we registered as a sport federation. We work with the other aquatic sport federations: Swimming South Africa, Rowing South Africa, Paddle Sport, Sailing South Africa. We do collaborate. And for example, with Swimming South Africa, you have the Learn to Swim teachers. So I think Andrew makes a very good point. None of us have the resources to be able to roll out a national program, reach out to every kid in every corner. We actually got to pool our minimal and our scarce resources so that we can actually hit this bigger target. And your point about the corporates coming on, what better way for corporates to use their corporate social investment to invest either in the transportation to get the kids to the schools, or, as Andrew mentioned, to build the facilities? Or hopefully, we can convince municipalities who cannot manage their service delivery, convince them to go into a public-private partnership. They own the facilities, we have the volunteers, a corporate comes in, and we create this PPP to actually run and manage the pools so that they are operational they are available to be to teach the different sectors of our community. So yeah, we can move from what we have at the moment to what we can actually do if we can develop these partnerships. And I think your media station can certainly drive the corporates to come and hold hands with us.
Absolutely. It's something that, we, you know, this is a Jewish radio station. We're very good at guilt. And we get it from our parents. You know, we say we understand with the Muslim community, the Catholic community, and the Jewish community, we understand guilt from our parents. So we know we got to perform and we can apply that. So I think there's a couple of things that I wanted to touch on, and for both of you. The one incredible thing, which is an amazing asset and I think a real challenge, when you provide swimming education and people become competent in the water and they don't panic, you never know when those skills save their lives. They're not SMSing you or doing a post on Instagram to say, I nearly got into trouble, but I got out of it very quickly because I have the skill set. We go on about our daily lives, and I think that's the incredible benefit. And I thought about it when you mentioned nippers, because I remember being in the Camps Bay pool, and it suddenly dawned on me that, you know, 6 months ago, 10 minutes into our training, I would have been in trouble, and now it's just uncomfortable in terms of practicing. And I'm not built for endurance. I'm a power lifter. I lift heavy things, and in martial arts, I throw people. I'm not an endurance athlete. So, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes in the pool, even with breaks, was a lot for me. But we don't see the actual benefit, and I think that's something that people need to understand and get involved in. And the so many free services, from the training at the Sea Point Pavilion to the online resources. And I think if people are taking advantage of that, give an hour or give 2 hours or get in touch and see how you can support the two organizations. And just from my you know, one of the questions, I get great questions from Sina, but she asks, you know, who is most at risk? And what are the common circumstances surrounding drowning? And I just wanted to mention something that about, I've been sober for 19 years. And one of my last holidays in Durban, I was about 50, 60 kilos heavier. And I know how to swim. And I understand the sea. And I grew up in the sea. I grew up on Camps Bay and Buckhaven and on Clifton and on North Beach, by the way, which was great. But I went in and I was a complete idiot. I thought, let me just go and cool off. I'm hot by the lighthouse in Umhlanga. Went in there just between the lighthouse and Granny's pool. And I hit a sandbank that I didn't realize. And I dropped and I got caught in a wash. And I panicked. I didn't even realize it. And I was 6 or 7 meters from the shore. I was going into cool off, not even to swim. And the ocean got me. And I managed to get back in. And I was struggling to catch my breath for about 15 minutes on the beach. So it's not about who's at risk. We're all at risk. I think that's the reality. And I'd love both of your thoughts on that. I think, Andrew, if we can start with you, and then Daya to you as well. You know, it's...
Nicholas, I mean, I think that's such a good story, and I have a very similar one. I'm a strong swimmer. I've been in the water since probably before I could walk. I think I could swim, taking crayfish and palamon out with my father as a tiny, tiny child. And it was maybe just over a decade ago that I went to Wilderness to make a rip current video. So. Mm-hmm. I think that without a doubt, the biggest danger that people face when they go to a beach or rip currents, I think that that's where our lifeguards are just so amazing. And that's why you'll hear Diane, I say, and all of the people involved in our industry, if you choose to go to a beach, please choose a beach where lifeguards are on duty. And it's mainly because of rip currents. They are a nightmare. Shall I come back
Absolutely.
To
you? Yeah, thank you. We'll come back to that now. And also what I wanted to touch on, and I don't want to forget it, Daya, for both of you guys, go and speak to the lifeguards before you get into the water. Go and chat to the guys at the NSRI station before you get in the water. Find out about the conditions. I want to get your thoughts on that. You listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Nicholas Single. I'm chatting with Daya and Andrew. We're talking water safety.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Thank you so much for joining us today here on the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. Sorry about that, Craig. I had my mic muted. My job is to give Craig a hard time, our fantastic controller. So we're chatting life-saving and or just water safety, life-saving, NSRI, life-saving. So just two incredible institutions that keep us safe and literally save lives on a daily basis. You might notice I changed the background a little bit. So before we went to break, Andrew, we were chatting with you and you were telling us about the danger of rip currents for a normal person or even a strong swimmer.
Yeah, Nicholas, so you were talking about your experience on the KZN North Coast. And I just over a decade ago, went to Wilderness to make a video for the NSRI on rip currents. I'm used to rip currents, I understand them, and I was there to make a video. I took a GoPro with me, there was a rescue boat on the beach, there was a rescue swimmer with me, and there were crew in the rescue boat. But these rip currents at Wilderness are steam trains. They go 50, 60 meters wide, and they pull out 200, 300, 400 meters. I mean, they are something to behold. In fact, like many on the KZN coast. So I climbed into this thing with a rescue swimmer and I was filming him and myself, and I looked at the beach and saw how fast I was being pulled away from it, and my chest closed up. I felt panic rising and I had to give myself a good talking to. I'm going like, seriously? I mean, no. If that is something that I experienced as a strong swimmer who knew exactly what was happening, for somebody who is not a strong swimmer and who doesn't understand what is happening, it must be the most terrifying thing in the world. So really, if you're going to a beach, the bottom line is please go to a beach where lifeguards are on duty and swim between their flags. That's why you need to do it. But having said all of that, I hope we can save a bit of time at the end to talk about drowning inland, which actually is where most of our South Africans drown.
Sure. I think we can absolutely touch on that right now. Before we go into that, so we've got about 5 or 6 minutes of this segment left, and then we'll wrap up where I'd like a thought from each of you. Just if we look at chatting to the lifeguards, for me, I go up to them, hey, what's the blue bottle situation? How cold is the water really? When did you update the chalkboard? You know, I'm a Cape Townian, what can I say? And, you know, just what are the conditions like? Is there a rip current? What do I need to know about? Is it too busy? You know, should I come back at a quieter time? What should people be talking to their lifeguards about? And why should they be going and talking to the lifeguards or talking to the NSRI before they get into the water? Di, let's start with you on that, please.
Yes. And I think, you know, you touch on a very important point, because not many people have that self-knowledge, the knowledge of ocean conditions. Mm-hmm. Just last week or so, we had reports, I think Andrew reported on a couple of surfers that actually got sucked out and had to get assistance to come back, right? By the way, you know, we also thank surfers, because a lot of rescues are made by surfers themselves, for people who, you know, who are not swimming in the bathing zone. But the idea is that the lifeguards get there very early in the morning. They assess the conditions. They themselves go for the training swim. They get a sense of what's happening with the ocean, and they choose the most safest bathing zone, right? Which means that if you stay within that zone, firstly, they got eyes on you all the time, right? And secondly, if the conditions change, they will move it. As you mentioned, you know, they keep them on a sandbank where it's safe. People can actually swim, play around. But like you say, sandbanks also collapse and it can create a new risk in that area. So they do actually, you know, they assess those conditions. But even if you don't have the time to actually speak to them, the golden rule is, look out for the red and yellow flags. We call them bathing beacons. Look out for the red and yellow flags and simply stay between those red and yellow flags. If you don't have time to go and find out about conditions, at least go and say thank you to the lifeguards, because they have That visual that you put up on your background, if you look at that again, we have thousands of people there, but you will see in the picture the lifeguards are on the rubber duckies, on the jet skis, on the rescue boards and the Malibu boards, and they're ensuring that before you actually get into trouble, they get you out of that risky zone. There's a saying within life saving is that you're not a good lifeguard if you dive five times in the ocean to pull five people out. You're a good lifeguard because you prevented five people from getting to trouble in the first place, and that's what you see in that visual, and that is why the lifeguards must be praised for their sterling preventative work to ensure that those thousands of people can all go home safely, go back home as a family that they came to
Absolutely,
be.
I love that thing. And Andrew, before we go to you about the inland risks and challenges, I just wanted to ask Daya, are we allowed to buy the lifeguards in Umhlanga the dinky donuts when we come off the beach to say thank you? Or is that, we're going to end up with a whole bunch of chunky lifeguards. So.
Yeah, and the diet trends have changed. Lots of them also wolf down the bunny chows as well.
Absolutely. Thank you. And let's talk about inland and the risks. And then just before we go to ad break, what can we do to teach people? Okay, we're going to ad break now, then we'll come back to that very quickly. What can we do to teach someone or upskill someone who doesn't have access to water? Is there something that we can tell them what to do? Try to get on your back, just tread, don't panic. It's about buying time before you can be helped. So we'll touch on that as soon as we've paid the rent here on 101.9 High FM. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday Show.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You're listening to the Disco Medical Monday Show here on 101.9 High FM. I'm being quick now because we're going to go to Andrew. We've got like 3 minutes before we have to end the show and such important info. Let's chat about inland risks.
Yeah, so Nicholas, your 3 minutes has set me into a panic straight away.
Sorry.
So I think what I would really like to land is probably the most important thing that we can ask parents and caregivers is to supervise your children. It's really it's important to understand that drowning is silent. It's not like in the movies where people splash the water, flap their arms around, and scream, "Help, help, I'm drowning." It is literally absolutely silent. So if you're not watching your children, you will not see them slip under the water. That is really the golden nugget for parents and caregivers. The other one you mentioned earlier, alcohol. Please don't drink alcohol and go into the water. We don't drink and drive. It's become uncool to do that in South Africa, and it's exactly the same as swimming or going near the water, going into the water. Just don't drink and swim. If you have a swimming pool at home, even in winter cold weather, please make sure that it's covered. It has a childproof fence around the cover, or the net is childproof. It's properly accredited. And lastly, very quickly, for those who drive through rivers, whether it be a four-wheel drive expedition or so on, you might see on social media people doing insane things with water coming up to the bonnets. And it's don't do this. Please don't do it. 15 centimeters of water can wash you off your feet. 30 centimeters of water can wash your vehicle, a heavily laden 4x4 vehicle, away. So don't try and cross flooding rivers. Please go around.
That's and camp rather. So a really great advice. If we just to wrap up very quickly, by the way, I put two pictures of some guys from Clifton, a couple of legends behind me. And just what advice do we have for our listeners? Di, if we could go to you, if you could make one statement that could potentially save a life.
Yes, I want to reflect on what Andrew said and just expand on that very quickly. If you look at the drowning stats in South Africa, very high indeed, anything from 1,500 to 2,500 per annum. And the biggest proportion in the age demographic is children. It's children. So, probably, at least 30 to 40% of that is children who actually drown. So It's even at bath time, never to leave a kid alone and to go and answer a cell phone. We also know that South Africa is absolutely, we have flood-prone areas, but we have water-scarce areas. And then we also know that municipalities, again, are not delivering on water. People store water in buckets and containers at home. And all it takes is for a little toddler to fall headfirst in 5 centimeters of water, and you can have a tragedy. So all of these containers, and these are documented tragedies that we have, to have the containers covered at all times, so that you minimize that risk. But very importantly, I think supervision of children. It's these layers that we create, having children at arm's length, the barriers, like Andrew said, the fences, etc. And then, of course, moving on to other barriers like the lifeguards. So training the child to observe those barriers from, not going to swim alone, supervising the child, keeping them at arm's length. If the gate, the pool gate is locked, then respect that,
Absolutely
and move on
fantastic.
to the various layers.
And I love it. Set the layers, because layers buy us time, right? Exactly as we secure our house with a fence, burglar bars, doors, a gate in the sleeping area, that's how we need to be viewing. So absolutely. Andrew, your thoughts just before we wrap up. Sorry for making you chuckle there, but I found it.
Awesome. I just love that picture. It feels like home. Yeah, I think if supervise your children, turn around, don't drown.
I absolutely love that. It's our responsibility. It's a human right, I believe. Just if you can teach someone to swim and give them that gift, do that. Absolutely phenomenal. We've had some great questions and comments, by the way, from our listeners. We just haven't been able to get to them. And I thank our listeners for that. And just to our fantastic guests, both of you, thank you for joining us. Thank you for what you do. And, may what you do become non-essential, because everybody has upskilled and educated. I think that would make everybody very, very happy just to spend the day on the beach and the day training. It would be absolutely wonderful. You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. A big thank you to Andrew Ingram from the National Sea Rescue Institute and from Daya Sudith, spokesperson for the life-saving board member and okay, wow, I'm killing it. Okay, from Life Saving South Africa. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today. And I will chat with you guys next week. And of course, as always, Craig, thank you for pushing the buttons. Sina, thank you for organizing our
Thank
wonderful
you.
guests.